solidarity with our Palestinian brothers and sisters on behalf of the Gumbanja Nation, my people who've never ceded their sovereignty.
We should be recognising Palestine as a state and recognising the rights of Palestinians.
3CR, stay tuned, stay radical.
This program was produced for Radio 3CR by Vivian Langford. It is a taste of some of the voices at the Palestine Action Group rallies in Sydney over the last 2 years. It's a tribute to their disciplined organisation and even fighting for our right to protest in the courts. I dedicate this to the spirit of Samud, shown so staunchly by this diaspora community and all their relations in Palestine. Meanwhile, the people of Gaza have not been able to escape. From the first rally at Sydney Town Hall, I could see their weeping relatives in the crowd. Older women like me, showing photos of their family back in Gaza and the bombing. As our state government permitted the Israeli flag to be projected onto the Opera House, these people gathered every Sunday in Hyde Park and then marched chanting down the main streets.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. My name is Tala Salam. I'm a 15-year-old Palestinian from the village of At-Tira in Al-Lid, Palestine, and I stand here in front of you as a byproduct of the 48 Nakba. I'm the daughter of Palestinian refugees, granddaughter of Nakba survivors, and niece to prisoners and resistance fighters. You've all heard it before, but I will say it again and again. They said that the old will die and the young will forget, but I am the young and I have not forgotten.
I never thought it would go on so long, but as the media narrative twisted and turned but never really reported the Palestinian and later the Lebanese voices from the street, I held out my microphone and channeled the anguish back to 3CR. One day a TV cameraman was there and I asked him if they'd broadcast the speeches. Oh no, he said, I'm just catching the local colour. Another day, 12 months in, the people carried a piece of red fabric, the length of a city block. And the helicopter TV cameras caught this colour, never explaining that it represented the red lines that Israel has crossed and crossed again. In Gaza, journalists are targeted and killed. Their Samud, their heroism, is a beacon to our craven media, whose silence is complicity.
This is a very clear message to every journalist that's attending our protest today for the first time in months, that's attending our protest to get a quick snippet to add into their daily reporting, as if our lives don't matter. I have a message for you. How many hundreds of your colleagues in Gaza and Lebanon and the West Bank need to be slaughtered until you speak up? Where is your duty and dedication to spread the word of truth, to look after your colleagues who are being targeted and massacred and sniped? Where is your shame? When you witnessed our dear and eternal martyr, Shireen Abu Aqleh, wearing a press vest, sniped in her head, what did you say about that? When you witnessed the hundreds of Palestinian journalists in Gaza, when you witnessed their slaughter, their targeted slaughter, what did you say? Or do you care too much about your pockets and your damn CVs? We hold you, the media, the so-called Australian media, for your filthy reporting, for your biased reporting, for your Zionist reporting. We hold you accountable. I often hear, sometimes I hear the question, what's the point of these weekly protests? Why do we keep coming out week after week, day after day, when our people are being slaughtered on the daily? Well, I'll tell you what the point of that is. We have become our own media. We have become our own media. We are sharing the atrocities that are happening back in our homelands. We are speaking up for the voiceless. We are changing the narrative. We are part of the great global narrative shift that is aimed at taking down this world order. You and me, my friend, we will do this together. So don't give up. No matter how hard they try, no matter how hard they try to buy off the media and the governments and the leaders, our power is in our numbers. And we have not stopped fighting for 365 days and 76 years. Every time the media lies! Another child in Gaza dies!
The leadership of these rallies has very often been by women, and 70% of those killed in Gaza have been women. Many doctors featured because the bombing of hospitals and targeting aid workers is one of the greatest breaches of that decency that holds our humanity together.
Dr. Sanjay Adsimili, and I think like from that chant just before that we are all Palestinians, he is someone that embodies that message of solidarity. He is a surgeon who spent time in Gaza up till about 4 or 5 weeks ago trying to treat people who are victims of this genocide. So I want you to give him a warm welcome that he's come here to speak to us, and thank him very much for his work and his solidarity.
Thank you, everyone. I'd first start off by acknowledging the traditional owners of this land. And I want to tell you, up until a month ago, I felt I was the most ignorant surgeon in Sydney. And the reason being is because I thought we lived in a beautiful world, but coming back from Gaza, I actually realized that we don't. We live in a world where there is a massacre happening in a country, and we're sitting here enjoying the luxuries of our city, and I acknowledge Sydney is a wonderful place, but most people are ignorant to what is happening halfway across the world, where children are being massacred in the thousands. Now, something that a surgeon, whilst I was in Gaza, he said something to me that stuck with me. He said, you might come here and you might operate on 100 people and save 80%, but when you come back and you spread the word of what you saw, that could potentially save thousands. So I feel it's my responsibility now to tell you exactly what is happening, and hopefully you can spread that message and we can impart some change. So I'm a surgeon. I'm also a co-founder of a charity called the Global Medical Foundation, and we've been doing medical missions for many years, but nothing prepared me for what I saw in Gaza. I was there for just over 2 weeks, and the very first day that I was stationed at Al-Aqsa Hospital, there was a bombing close by in a little dirt area next to a bunch of tents. And 20 people came in one instant. The entire emergency department floor was full of bodies. Half of them were already dead. I would go through and I would assess each patient, and with a permanent marker, if they were dead, I'd put a cross on their chest and move on to the next one. The floor would be covered in blood. Half of these people would be children, little kids, and I would assess one child, and whilst I go to the next one, this child would die before my eyes. It is horrible. And you cannot tell me that a government is sitting there trying to stop terrorism when there is all these innocent civilians being killed on a daily basis.
What was that song? What is that song?
It's about like a patriotic song about Palestine and people of Palestine. We're gonna return one day.
Please, please give a round of applause to Dr. Aziz Pirmani.
I have recently returned from Gaza and I really have two messages from there. The first is what you're doing is amazing. Right? What every single one of you is doing is having an impact. It is affecting them there. It's affecting change. And it's something that we've got to keep doing. The second is that what you see on your social media reels, what you're hearing is true. The atrocities that we're seeing are actually real. And in fact, it's much worse than real. It's truly the Hunger Games on steroids. You basically enter Gaza through large prison gates. There's 50-foot prison walls that surround you on all sides and make sure you're part of the games. There's constant drones overhead. There's bombs going off. There's people getting massacred every day. Every single day, I would see at least 2 to 3 children coming in dead on arrival. Every single day, I would see 1 or 2 kids with their limbs blown off that would require amputations. Look, the city, when you drive through the city, it's in complete ruins. It does look like a dystopian film. There's words that don't describe it. There's 30 minutes of driving with every single building being flattened, not one single building standing. Every single person I met, whether it was a patient, whether it was a staff member like a nurse or a doctor, or anyone on the street, every single person had been dispossessed, was living homeless in a tent with very little. And if they were really lucky, they were living in an overcrowded building. That was like amazing if they got to do that. They're all hungry. There are some people that are starving, some people that are severely malnourished, but no one is full. Every single person is hungry. It's dark. There's no electricity. There's no running water. There's no sewerage. This scanty internet, it just doesn't make sense. Then it gets worse because then there's no work, right? And there's no education, there's no institutions. Not only do you not have work, we're still, the place that you work no longer exists. Your kids don't have a school, there's no playgrounds. And in fact, while I was there, a playground that was about 700 meters from the hospital got bombed. 15 kids died that day. This isn't collateral damage. This is systematic. It's purposeful. This is a powerful colonial settler occupation doing what it does best. This is genocide. There's nothing else for it. What I saw would break me and break anyone. But the people I met, oh my God, these are amazing people. These people are resilient. You meet their gaze and they smile at you. They have clung onto their humanity. They are still gracious. They are still trying to help each other. They're still trying to look after each other. Whereas any other person, I think if I was in the games, I'd be looking after myself and nobody else. But here they are, still trying to help each other.
Okay, I now want to introduce Dr. Sarah Abdo. She is a senior staff specialist. She was born and raised in Sydney. She is the proud daughter of a 1948 Nakba survivor who was born in Jaffa and spent a few years in Khan Yunis before fleeing to Egypt. She has been outspoken about the importance of not losing our humanity in this conflict. And she is here along with her healthcare worker colleagues, many of which are in here in the crowd, who continue to provide unwavering support to the people and colleagues suffering under occupation and oppression. So make her feel welcome.
Thank you, Damien. Thank you to the unrelenting effort of the humans of the world who turn up for humanity. I want to start with a quote. And if I go, who treats my patients? We are not animals. We have the right to receive proper health care, so we can't just leave. You think I went to medical school and for my postgraduate degrees for a total of 14 years so I can think only about my life and not about my patients? I'm asking you, ma'am, Dr. Hammam says to the interviewer as he is being interviewed and broadcast across the entire world days before he is massacred in his workplace looking after his patients. I'm asking you, ma'am, do you think this is the reason I went to med school? To think only about my life? This is not the reason I became a doctor. For more than half a year, we have witnessed our medical colleges and representatives seeing these horrors and completely remaining silent and neutral. Dr. Hammam was massacred in the hospital, but we know over 400 healthcare workers have been murdered, along with the 40,000 Palestinians who have been murdered, along with the 15,000 children who have been murdered. Not only that, we know the tactic of the Israeli occupation is to abduct and torture and imprison and then murder our colleagues. Our colleague, Dr. Adnan, you would have seen on social media, head of orthopedic surgery, an upstanding 50-year-old man who was arrested and detained for 100 days. Only now we hear of his murder under that occupation in imprisonment. Not only do Palestinians not get peace in their life, no, there is no peace after their death. His body still has not been released, unlike another prisoner who was tortured, and his tortured and mutilated body was dumped in Gaza at the same time as the news of this death. We know medical aid and essential supplies have been blocked. No condemnation. Quietly, our colleagues will say to us, we are sorry, but quiet is not what is required at this time. We need a loud, unified message. What message has been sent to criminal regimes around the world? You know who should be scared right now? You know who should feel unsafe right now? The people who remain silent while these atrocities are taking place that any human can recognize as an atrocity. Every single red line has been crossed by the state of Israel. Commit an attack and see if there are any consequences. No consequences ensue. A few headlines if you're lucky, and then they repeat the attacks as usual. Flower massacre, playgrounds massacred, silence. Playgrounds, 11 children in a playground. Not a peep from Western media. Unfortunately, I'm very saddened and we mourn
that the international rules-based order has been thrown into a fire in Gaza. Hospital strikes have been normalized. Mosques, all universities, schools, pregnant women, elderly women, 94-year-old elderly women who we knew she was left behind in the north. Her family have now discovered her charred remains. I don't need to repeat all the atrocities because everybody here knows. Everybody here is awake. Everybody here is aware. My words are to the disgusting mainstream media who after 7 months, where are you? Where are you? Come and speak to us. Come and interview us. We are happy to put our names and our faces because this is a humanitarian cause. There is no pro-Israel. There is no pro-Palestine. There is only pro-humanity right now. And if you can't see that, there is something gravely wrong with you. So after the media, who are just a talking avenue for our government, I would like to address our government on social cohesion. Look around you. Does this not look like a socially cohesed place? All the different ages, all the different cultures, all the different religions. We do not need to be lectured about social cohesion in this country. This government has a fallacy about so-called social cohesion, a fallacy based on ignorance. There is no authentic respect, there is no dignity, and there is no value placed to every human life, regardless of color, regardless of religion, regardless of where you come from. What we know, this statement where they say we don't want overseas conflicts imported and brought to this country. We are not importing overseas conflicts. We are standing up for humanity. Yeah. So at the end of this day, I am proud to say that as healthcare workers, we say, are you okay with the killing of children? Are you okay with the killing of doctors, nurses, aid workers? No. So I'm going to leave you now with the words of an orphaned child from Gaza that's scribbled on a piece of paper before we start this rally that I'm proud to say will be led by a group of healthcare workers who've been turning up week in, week out. This young boy said, "Why didn't the world intervene? Why? I am so tired and sad because I can't see you, Mama. They bombed us, the occupation's planes deprived me of you. You are gone and you left me behind, Mama. I want to be next to you forever. I miss you, Mama. You are the source of my life. My mother, my mother, my mother. Where is the world? Where are you, Mama? They deprived me of you. Speak up in any way that you can. I know that you guys all have different capacity, but please keep spreading the word. Ultimately, our mainstream media and governments are responsible, and all our demands are is that they spread the message as it needs to be spread. We are all speaking up for our own humanity. Thank you.
Powerful words from Dr. Sarah. Thank you so much, Sarah. And thank you so much to everyone that came out today despite the rain, because rain, hail, or shine, we will free.
It's been 9 months. Last Sunday, it was raining. And I just wanted to describe to listeners how the heavy, agonized mood of the crowd was lifted by a song. When David Rovics started playing and he said the word Houthi rebellion, a thrill went through the crowd. It was like a great electric shot of energy as faces beamed and children drummed. I'd love you to have been there. It was like a gift of courage to people who have been so sorely tested.
This is one for the actual resistance, not whatever people would like to imagine is happening. This is a song about Ansar Allah.
For a country that doesn't have an air force, they're painting black, red, green, and white. On the helicopters they use to board the ships to show their cause is right. The president says this terrorism must stop right away. To which the Houthis respond, yes, that's exactly what we are trying to say. Shukran jazilan to the Houthi army standing for the conscience of us all. When they say no business as usual, while the bombs continue to fall. Ships are going all the way round Africa to avoid the Houthi net. If Israel wants trading partners now, they might be just a little harder to get. We can blockade ports all over, north, south, east, and west. But the Houthi army are the ones who are no doubt blocking the traffic the best. Shukran jazilan to the Houthi army standing for the conscience of us all. When they say no business as usual, while the bombs continue to fall.
Now I'm beyond honored to introduce our next speaker. Professor Mazen Qumsiyya is a Palestinian scientist and author. He's the founder and director of the Palestine Museum of Natural History and the Palestine Institute for Biodiversity and Sustainability at the University of Bethlehem. He is a professor, has a PhD in biology, and is also an author. He's written over 30 books and published hundreds of articles in reputable journals. Please give a warm welcome to Professor Mazen.
Assalamu alaikum. From our first intifada, I wrote a book about that. We had 14 before this Gaza ghetto uprising. And I insist to call it the Gaza ghetto uprising because Gaza Strip is basically a concentration camp, a people warehouse. We have many friends in Gaza, and I lost some of them. Like Marwan Tarazi, for example, a Palestinian Christian, by the way, not even a Muslim. We have been fighting this colonial settler system, settler colonialism, which you all in Australia are very familiar with it and its symptoms, including the fact of killing the indigenous people, the fact of labeling them as terrorists and quote-unquote troublemakers. Well, you know, yeah, when the Minister of Defense said we are cutting water, electricity, food, fuel, medicines on Gaza because we're dealing with human animals, I am proud to be a human animal, okay? If that is what is in his view. So I changed my Facebook profile since October 7 to read the human animal. Animals are actually much more decent than any of the kind of actions that this Zionist regime has been doing, intentionally targeting children, intentionally targeting journalists, actually at a higher proportion than the rest of the population. At a higher proportion, Israel killed journalists. At a higher proportion of the population, Israel killed medical personnel. Some 5 to 7% of medical personnel were killed. As you know, Israel destroyed the universities in Gaza. 90,000 students have not been able to go to the universities, will no longer exist anyway. What we have to do as human beings is look at this and say, what is my role? What is your role? whether you are apathetic outside this demonstration or you are like here showing up and doing something. If we stay on this road, it's finished. We are not going to, it's not just Palestinians. Palestine is only a small stop, by the way. It's coming. It's coming here in Australia. As you know, the regional war that already started in the Middle East, why do you think Congress just approved $94 billion, including three areas, Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan and the Indo-Pacific? My wife is from Taiwan, by the way. And why are they doing this? They want to start a world war. And the trilateral agreement between Australia, the UK, and the US, the AUKUS agreement, as it's called, what is that about? It's preparing for a world war. I assure you, the next world war will be the end of us as humans. We won't have this beauty. We won't have this culture.
The chant, Albanese, you can't hide, you're committing genocide, was a bridge too far for some of my friends. They didn't get it. It made them feel very uncomfortable. But then 300,000 people marched across the harbour bridge, and ALP elder Bob Carr was at the front, holding up a banner saying, for humanity. So the ALP did turn up on that day, and I wish they would turn up more often to see the crowd, to listen to them. They might get shouted at, but they need to hear it. At the weekly rallies, I've never heard one ALP speaker, and so the rhetoric becomes more and more anguished as people say, they were welcome to our Ramadan celebrations. We thought they understood our community. Blood on their hands. Then when ALP's Fatima Payman crossed the floor, here's what the rally said.
We, of course, salute Fatima Payman for taking this step. It's a step forward for the campaign, and I think we're going to see, you know, without overstating it, this is a victory of our mass movement over these past 9 months. And Fatima Payman herself credited, actually, the student camps as playing a crucial role in her realising that she had to take a stronger stand than she had been. It was those student protest camps where she visited at Sydney Uni and at Curtin University. And I've got to say, the students did not greet her with teas and scones initially. And they were right not to do so, because this was before she'd crossed the floor. She faced anger from those students and demands to take a stronger stand. And this is the result. The result is she has taken a stronger stand. And I think this is an important lesson for our whole movement. We don't get anywhere by begging and scraping those in power. We get places by mobilising and demanding. We demand the Labour politicians cross the floor. Why the hell are they not taking a stand, the same stand, crossing the floor and voting? And voting. We don't just want your words behind the scenes. We don't want your bullshit that you're fighting internally. We need you to take a public stand for Palestine. Today it's been 9 months. What are you waiting for?
In contrast to absent Labour and absent Liberal parliamentarians, Greens Senator Mehreen Farooqi and State MPs Sue Higginson and Jenny Leong have been there all along, either as speakers or just in the crowd. And Senator David Shoebridge has been building the case, which is now cutting through, that Australia is complicit by exporting materials for Israel's war machine. Plus, who knows how much other diplomatic and intelligence support, which Chris Sozzotti, our Australian top human rights lawyer working for the UN, endorsed at the National Press Club.
Senator David Shoebridge has been on the front line, standing side by side with us, fighting for the last 9 months against the genocidal Australian party.
Connection of Palestine and Palestinian people to the land of Palestine, that this land too is First Nations land. This always was and always will be Gadigal land. I can't believe we've had to be doing this for now 43 weeks. 43 weeks of standing up and showing principles that our government has refused to show. But I can tell you now that in a fortnight when I go back into Parliament and go back into that Senate and I look at the Labor government and I look at the coalition and I think, what Australia do you stand for? What's the Australia that they stand for? Is it the Australian of weapons manufacturers and
toadies to the United States, the Australia that turns its eye away from war crimes and the death of children, because that is the country that they stand for. And it's not the Australia I know. And it's not the Australia that's here. And it's not the Australia that's shown up now for 43 weeks to demand a different country, a different planet, and justice around the planet. In the last week, we shared with you and we shared with the public yet more evidence of the Australian government being complicit in the ongoing genocide in Gaza. And we shared the information about an Australian weapons manufacturer which makes an anti-drone weapon just here in Sydney. And a photograph produced by them, shared by them with their investors. They want more money to invest in their weapons programs here. Shared it just in February of an Israeli soldier in Israel holding a weapon made only in Australia. Holding a weapon made only in Sydney, and a weapon that's only been produced since April of last year. And indeed, they also shared an image of that same weapon, the drone gun, in the hands of Prime Minister Albanese when he was in Washington talking war and power and AUKUS and weapons with the US government. And in answer to that, a photograph of an Australian weapon made only since April in the hands of an Israeli soldier in Israel, the same weapon being held by Prime Minister Albanese, we again got gaslighted by the Labor government. And they said that Australia has not sent any weapons to Israel in the last 5 years. Now, on what planet do these two facts live? It's a planet where we're lied to by our government. A government that continues to export weapons parts for the F-35 that goes to the appalling genocide in Gaza. A government that continues to give export permits to a company also just in New South Wales, BisAlloy, which sends weaponized hardened steel to the Israeli weapons manufacturers. And it's a government that, as you know to its shame, signed an almost $1 billion contract with an Israeli arms manufacturer just in February of this year. And I'll give you just another little insight into the way this works. Because a fortnight ago, I was at a weapons fair in Perth. A weapons fair where Australia was sponsoring arms manufacturers to sell the AUKUS deal and the ongoing weaponising of our region. Sponsored by the Albanese government, sponsored by the WA government, sponsored by universities across this country. And they invited a weapons manufacturer from Israel called Rafael Systems to that site. And there, in a large convention center paid for by the public, they invited Rafael to come and present to the most senior members of the Department of Defense, to the most senior military, to members of the Albanese government and the opposition. And in front of my eyes, Rafael Systems showed video after video after video of their weapons. Their weapons being used in Gaza, their weapons being used in Lebanon, their weapons being used in Yemen to kill Palestinians and the Lebanese and people from Yemen. And they showed these videos in plain sight in a weapons fair in Australia. And do you know what they said? They said, this proves they work, because we've experimented on the weapons in Palestine, and they've experimented on the weapons in Lebanon, and they've experimented on the weapons in Yemen. And they said to the Australian government, that's why you should buy our weapons. Well, I say never. We should never buy weapons that have been experimented on the people of Palestine. We should never buy weapons sold by arms manufacturers that are making a killing out of a genocide, and we should cancel every one of those contracts.
Last week, Green Senator Maureen Faruqi held up a sign in the Senate saying, Gaza is starving. Words won't feed them. Sanction Israel now. When she was disciplined, she said, instead of sanctioning me, maybe you should think about sanctioning Israel. Meanwhile, outside, there was a large protest meeting, also calling for sanctions against Israel, among other things. People had come by bus from Sydney, Melbourne, a lot of different places to converge on Canberra on its first day of the new parliament just after US bombs were dropped on Iran.
Assalamu alaikum, peace be upon you. Right now, we are staring down the barrel of a potential World War III. The signs are all around us. The signs have been all around us. Israel has killed tens of thousands of Palestinians, massacred them mercilessly. It has bombed five of its neighbors, Palestine, Syria, Lebanon, Yemen, and now Iran. Israel is the only country in the Middle East with nuclear weapons. And yet, it faces no consequences, no red lines, no sanctions, no accountability. Israel can kill anyone it wants with full immunity from the rest of the world.
I want to acknowledge all of you, and I want you to acknowledge each other now. You are our humanity right now, being here on this land. Please, folks, acknowledge each other right now. It is protest. It is protesting for peace, for equality, for the end of genocide, for the protection of our beautiful places. It is protest that has and always will be the essential element that delivers that justice in our democracy. Protest is fundamental, and right now it's under threat.
The UN has not lived up to expectations in my experience of the climate conferences, and now here with this absolute international emergency. And they blame it all on the Security Council veto. A lot of countries just throw up their hands and say, nothing to do with us, really. However, Francesca Albanese, their special rapporteur, has kept alive the Palestinian voice. She explains from every possible angle the ways in which governments, including the Australian government, and businesses have failed to support the United Nations, have been supporting Israel with weapons and even machinery to build those illegal settlements in the West Bank. They are all profitable, and it's pathetic to hide behind the United Nations veto, saying, oh, because of the veto, we can't do anything. Businesses can be banned, contracts can be torn up, and, you know, we can take a lot more action, many countries together, even as Penny Long likes to say. One of the most passionate women who spoke at the rallies quite often is Rula Kalafani. She has served at the United Nations herself, and she insists that there is plenty that countries can do. The General Assembly can work together in something called Uniting for Peace. The trigger is if international peace and security cannot be maintained because of the veto, the General Assembly can call for an emergency special session. And just on September the 25th, this was called for by 47 United Nations human rights experts. They said civilian activists have led the way with the flotilla, but it should now be nations, Mediterranean nations, deploying humanitarian naval missions. And all crossings into Gaza should be under United Nations supervision. Yet, as we go to air today, the Trump-Blair-Netanyahu team has another plan. So I'm sure it's a very fast-evolving situation, but the United Nations is gearing up, I think, to start invoking this very important provision called Uniting for Peace. Here's Rula.
I worked for the United Nations for over 10 years, and I know what I'm talking about, and I have seen these decisions made against Iraq and other countries. There is something called Uniting for Peace. It's a resolution, look for it, that they can adopt, and that can be adopted by the General Assembly. There's a difference between the 15 members, permanent members, and then all the General Assembly countries. Any country can adopt it, two-thirds of that resolution without a veto can be passed into the General Assembly. Embargo, economic, military embargo, can be used against Israel despite of the veto, and they know it. And they have used it in the 80s against South Africa, apartheid South Africa, and other instances in history. So governments cannot tell us that they are helpless and hopeless.
Just this week, Peter Dutton again is trying to use the slaughter of Palestinians to ramp up racism towards refugees, towards Muslims and Palestinians and Arabs. That again, he's tried to call for the banning of any refugee, any asylum seeker intake into Australia from Gaza, using the dog whistling accusations that all Palestinians are terrorists. Shame, Peter Dutton, shame. All the same time, that actually thousands of Israelis have been given tourist visas into Australia over that same period of time, many of them who would be active serving personnel with the terrorist organisation of the Israeli military that's carrying out this genocide.
We should be recognising Palestine as a state and recognising the rights of Palestinians.
3CR, stay tuned, stay radical.
Next speaker I want to invite to come up and speak is the daughter of Palestinian refugees, Rehab Sharida. Make her welcome.
While the media and other Australian institutions distract us with their WhatsApp lists and other trivial news, Gaza continues to be pounded. From the sky, the colonizer attacks an incarcerated population. But let's remember who the people of Gaza are. The people of Gaza are mostly, the vast majority, refugees from 271 villages that were destroyed in 1948. At the time, more than 500 villages were completely destroyed and ethnically cleansed. So the people in Gaza today are from 271 of those villages throughout historic Palestine. But I just want to give a little bit of context to what UNRWA is. So UNRWA was established around in the 1950s, specifically to service the needs of Palestinian refugees. A lot of needs of Palestinians, such as education, health, has been covered by UNRWA since then. It's the main service provider to Palestinian refugees. As I mentioned, over 80% of people in Gaza are refugees, therefore serviced by UNRWA. Not to mention Palestinian refugees in refugee camps in Lebanon and elsewhere. So, you know, my father, for example, he was 9 years old when our village was destroyed and my family was forced into Lebanon. He would not have received an education in the refugee camps in Lebanon growing up, was it not for UNRWA. Him and many of my cousins and relatives would not have received an education and basic health needs, basic treatment. So when we talk about cutting, when they talk about cutting UNRWA funds, we're talking about cutting the largest service provider at a time that the occupier is deliberately starving and shelling the native population. By cutting UNRWA funds while people in Gaza are being shelled and deliberately starved, could not make it clearer that this is the position that they've taken. But I also want to stress, I have a few relatives and friends in Lebanon who work for UNRWA, and our criticisms of UNRWA is that it doesn't go far enough. While it provides much needed services to Palestinians, a lot of my relatives who work for UNRWA have been silenced and can't talk about things like the right of return and issues that are central to the Palestinian refugee problem. So our criticism is that it hasn't gone far enough, because the Palestinian refugee problem can't be fixed by services. It's a political problem. It was a deliberate ethnic cleansing then, as it is a deliberate ethnic cleansing or attempt of ethnic cleansing in Gaza today, and therefore the solution is political. The solution is decolonial liberation.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast.
Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
And now to finish on this October the 7th Memorial broadcast, here is a filmmaker, Ala Al-Kaisi, reading a poem. She made a film called Nagam of Gaza about a young karate champion. Before Nagam died under Israeli bombing, her poem imagines speaking to the pilot who dropped the bomb as she is preparing a treat for the children taking refuge with her in a building. There are no bomb shelters in Gaza, of course.
Father, here in heaven, I see my killer. Father, here in heaven, I see my killer in his warplane, pressing the button that is going to kill me with all the women and children around me, the children to whom I was preparing sahlab just seconds before he pressed the button. They were so eager for the sahlab, deprived of it for the long days of war. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. He presses the button. I saw the children, Father, torn to pieces, like a red apple dropped into a blender. He didn't wait for them to drink the sahlab. He didn't wait for them to drink the sahlab, to satisfy their last desire, so they could die with a hint of happiness. The red mouth-watering apple, Father, do you remember it? It's lacerated. I saw his finger, Father, just before he pressed the button, and I wanted to talk to him for a moment. His side profile looked like my brother's, a faint beard, dark black hair, thick eyebrows, and a distinctive mole under his right eye, just like my brother Muhammad. The issue, Father, wasn't his finger deciding my death, nor his beliefs justifying my killing. The issue, Father, is that he didn't see my face, didn't speak to me, didn't ask for my opinion. He didn't ask if I wanted to die now or later. He didn't ask me, Father, which kind of death I would prefer. The problem, Father, is that he didn't see my face. I know well that if he had seen my face, he wouldn't have pressed the button. He wouldn't have chosen darkness. God showed me, Father, just seconds before my death, how he and I were the same. Can you believe that? We were one, my killer and I. But he didn't see it. I, however, was shown by God. I wanted to talk to him, to tell him, brother, stop, wait, think for a moment, take a deep breath, look at my face, it's the face of your sister. Look at the shredded apple pieces. They are your children. Wait, my brother, you're killing yourself. But I blame the distance, father. He was too far away from us. He was hanging in the sky, and we were on the ground. In his eyes, we were shadows, human shadows without faces or features. We had no eyes, father, and he had no heart. He didn't know about the Sahlab. He didn't know how much the children were longing for it. He didn't see the joy of five-year-old Yasmin as she smelled the cinnamon, waiting eagerly to sprinkle it over the delightful Sahlab. If he had seen my father, he wouldn't have done what he did. He wouldn't have pressed the button. He wouldn't have pressed the button if he had heard the children giggling around the Sahlab spot. He might have thought twice, but he was deaf. I heard later, father, that this poor soldier, my killer, the children's killer, was diagnosed with what they call post-traumatic stress disorder. Post-traumatic stress disorder. They said he could no longer eat meat, explaining it with what he saw of our scattered flesh. I'll tell you a secret, father. I visited him in his sleep. Yes, he saw me as a nightmare, but I never intended to scare him. He could feel me slipping into his dreams at night. He trembled. His heartbeat raced. Sweat poured from his body. He wet his bed and cried hysterically. I said to him, "Don't be afraid. That's not what I'm here for. I only want you to see my face, my human brother. Look into my eyes and let your heart beat." I gave him a heart, father. One he didn't have before. And it started beating for the first time. He touched his chest, unable to believe he now has a heart. He touched his chest, unable to believe he now has a heart. He didn't understand the meaning of the heartbeat and trembled even more. "It's beating," he scared. "Yes, that's what they call a heart. It beats. It means life. This is the purpose of our existence. Welcome to life, brother." I asked him, "Tell me, do I resemble someone you know?" He didn't answer. He avoided looking at me. I approached him from his right. He turned his face to the left. I approached him from his left. He turned his face right. I came above him, and he buried his head under his pillow. I slipped between his head and the pillow. "Look at me, tell me, for I won't leave you until you see me, until you look into my eyes and answer. Do I resemble someone you know? Do I resemble someone you know?" He screamed, cried, babbled. He rushed to his sleeping pills, swallowed them all, ran to the fridge for water. But guess what he found? A plate of cut meat. He screamed at the top of his lungs. No one heard him. He tried waking his family, but they wouldn't wake. He howled like a wounded wolf, but couldn't make a sound. "Are you horrified by the sight of the cut meat, brother?" I tried to comfort him. "Don't be afraid. Do you know my brother? I am like you, strange in my ways. I am afraid of sliced apples." I tried to comfort him. "Don't be afraid. Do you know my brother? I am like you, strange in my ways. I am afraid of sliced apples. He screamed, screamed, cried and wept. Yes, father, he now has a heart.